There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Did you come here to ruin the day for everybody?
Looks like it.
This is the Extra Hot Gray Podcast, episode 476 for the week of September 11th, 2023. I am Blue Man Groupie David T. Cole, and I'm here with Valuable Bookmark Sarah D. Bunting.
Wish you were here.
Wrong Breast Identifier Tara Ariano.
Oh yeah, those are the wrong ones.
And Less Than Sanitary Birthing Arrangement Dan Casino.
The 5-second rule does not apply on the subway.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us again, he is a full-time political scientist and part-time scoremaster on our sister podcast, The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. It's Dan Casino!
Dan Casino!
Damn you, Casino!
Thank you so much for having me.
We are here to talk about The Changeling. This fairy tale begins in a library in Queens, where patron Apollo Cagua, Lakeith Stanfield, meets librarian Emma Valentine, Clark Bacco. They fall in love and get married and have a baby or something. After Brian's birth, he won't sleep, causing the whole family to suffer, but none more than Emma, who seeks help from sketchy mommy forums online. Also, someone keeps texting her creep shots of Apollo and Brian out in the world that poof away when she tries to revisit them. But who? And why? And when Emma says the baby is not their child, is she right? This is so barely scratching the surface of what's going on with the show. But anyway, it was based on the novel by Victor Laval, who also narrates the show, and was created by Kelly Marcel, screenwriter of Cruella and both Venom movies, but also created Terra Nova. Remember Terra Nova?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Lots of people have a soft spot for Terra Nova.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. The first 3 episodes dropped on Apple TV Plus last Friday. We got the whole season. We will be careful about plot points from later episodes, although they, spoiler, don't even get all the way through the craziness of the book. So let's do the Chen check-in. Dan, should our listeners watch The Changeling?
Marginal yes.
Oh, Sarah.
This is so much smaller than the sum of the parts. I have to say no.
Dave?
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
No on The Changeling.
Yeah, I'm a no as well. And it's a bummer because it really seemed like a yes after the first 3 episodes. And then you keep watching and it's like, oh.
Oh, that's how they get you. That's how Apple got you.
They really do. It's how they get you.
The first 3 episodes are paced just so and have enough WTF in it that you're like, and then the further it goes along, the more it falls apart.
Well, they lost Sarah before that, apparently.
Sure.
Based on the head shaking.
I guess Sarah's just better at watching TV than the rest of us.
She's got good instincts. Yeah. All right.
Bitchier, anyway.
Let's get into it. Our past and future guest, Philip Maciak, wrote a piece connecting this story to Fleischman is in Trouble. We will link in the show notes. We get upside down shots again. A man whose his wife is gone somewhere and we don't know what's happened, blah, blah, blah. And from the outside, I feel like there can't possibly be too much art delving into the million ways our society does violence against parents in big and small ways, but also how parenting is a scam. Dan, as the only parent on the panel, please tell us what you think about these topics.
I gotta say, so the idea of a changeling as a metaphor for new babies, I mean, new babies are little parasitic sociopaths.
Yep.
And the idea that parents would be upset at them and want to think they're a monster, that's a very effective metaphor. And I actually really like the way that this show was about being a Black parent without being about race. And they had lots of really effective moments about that. And the underlying problem was not that that was a bad idea or that that didn't work. It was that they just kept on putting all the fairy tales in there. Like, is this Rapunzel? Is this mm-hmm. about hubris? Is this Medea? Is this a changeling? Is this the movie Cash for some reason? Like, and it turns out it's everything. And, you know, it's just like Coco Chanel that shit. And take three things off before you go to series.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I mean, when we got to the penultimate episode, which, like with Fleischman Is in Trouble, it switches perspective in a radical way. And at the end of it, I was like, this episode could have been an email. Like, there's selection that needs to happen when you're turning things that might work in a book, which I have not read, into a show. Like, you can overstuff a book in a way that you kind of can't or shouldn't with a show, especially if it's only supposed to be one season, which seems to be the case here. But Dan, before we move around to the rest of the panel, what made this a marginal yes for you?
So first off, they Apple spent so much money. And I know because of our economy, they have more money than Croesus. And they've mm-hmm. got all that money. And they're using it in sound design, in set mm-hmm. design, the 80s subway. I don't know where you get an 80s subway. Apparently, they got it from a museum. But
sure.
The fact that they have, you know, 80s subway, they really do effectively create 80s New York. Mm-hmm. They're shooting everything there. There's some really creepy scenes, especially in the top three. You know, there's a moment where we see a character moving around in a herky-jerky way that's super creepy. The sound design, maybe just flashbacks to when I had a little baby and was not getting as much sleep, but the sound design of, like, the tea kettles boiling, it's very effective. I think it is just trying too much. It gets away from it. It has a little Lost syndrome. We're trying to do everything.
Yeah.
But it still has very effective moments, even if the whole thing doesn't hang together.
Mm-hmm. So in the story skein about Apollo's parents, we find out they met when his father, Brian, was a parole officer to his mother, Lillian's boss, who was running a modeling agency that turns out to be a money laundering front. That got pretty quickly. I was relieved for Sarah. There was also rare book dealing content after that, but it feels like it was not enough.
Like, all the Buntnip elements are present. Catacombs beneath the city, like a hidden city beneath the city, mm-hmm. palimpsests of old New York, rare books, like a box of stuff labeled improbabilia, which is totally something that I would do and have done during moves, that it's like, all the other stuff, Fianna. Mm-hmm. And the performances are good, and Dan is exactly right. They obviously spent a lot of money on it, and they did spend it well and wisely on certain aspects of the craft. But I just kept thinking, like, I would much rather read this book, because I think that you can overstuff a book in a way that you can't or shouldn't with this particular story. For the screen, I just kept thinking, like, I think throwing all of these myths and legends and references at this family story works on the page, because you're using a different set of synapses or mm-hmm. like however you're receiving the story. I think it just works better, or probably, I haven't read it,
yeah,
as a text. Shout out to the author, who's like a good narrator. I sort right. of liked that. I liked his timbre, and I thought that that was a fun choice to use the actual author of the book. You don't usually see that.
Mm-hmm.
I always love Lakeith Stanfield. Clark Bacow as Emma is amazing. Like, there is really a lot of good acting in here. But there was just a moment halfway through episode two where it was like episode paused. And I was like, my problems with this as a property are not going to be solved by consuming any more of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just too in love with itself. And then to find out that the perspective changes radically in that way that's very similar to Fleischman Is in Trouble. And, like, why isn't that front loaded? Like, why don't Apple TV properties understand how to, like get you in the door and then close it behind you. Like, why are all of these episodes that should have been emails in the front of these seasons? It's maddening. I don't think anyone's wrong to enjoy this. It's beautiful to look at. But just for me, it was extremely frustrating with the pacing. And please make another property that it has, you know, fantastical catacomb elements and rare book dealers that fucking knows how to get in and out in 100 minutes. Is this not possible?
You're listening, Hollywood. Catacomb elements and rare book dealers. Something else for Sarah D. Bunting, please.
Mm-hmm. There are dozens of us.
Yeah, I think you're describing Good Omens season 2, weirdly, which has all the...
Dash and even Lillier.
Yeah. I was going to say, how did you not like this? It's Dash and Lily, but with shapeshifting Nordic baby demons.
Yeah, postpartum horror. Great. Just what I didn't want.
Except, of course, they don't really make a big point of the fact that, you know, they've got the intergenerational stalking, like, my father, my mother, by stalking her. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to do the same thing. And it's like, it's not cute
either. Mm-mm. No, it's not cute.
They make lip service to it with one line of dialogue during all that. But yeah. It didn't come off in the way that they wanted. I do have to reiterate, just because, you know, you'll be watching it on your own, perhaps, maybe before you even are listening to this and the first three episodes are out, and you're like, this is great. I'm into it because they've crafted it in the way that I would like more. And then you'll watch maybe episode 4, you're like, okay. And then like 5, 6, 7, 8, boy, episode 7. That was the one where I'm like, what the hell is going on with this show? Like, it is such a drop ship of an episode. Mm-hmm. It just like comes in and it's like, as Tara said, the moment, obviously written by a playwright in all the worst ways for me, not really liking that form, super self-indulgent, really slow, 2 pounds to show in a 20-pound bag. It was just bewildering, all the choices they made in that 7th episode. Just the whole back half generally is messy. But then at the very end of the show, where we find out all more about the supernatural aspects of what are going on, and I'm dancing around what's happening in case you do end up watching it all. It was one of those endings where I'm like, what the fuck was that? And I had to go to the internet and read what the actual book was at the end. And it's not like they changed it. They just, I'm going to assume, condensed 2 or 3 chapters into 10 seconds of footage at the end of the episode, because I knew the visuals what were going on, kind of.
Yeah.
But then I read the book. I'm like, oh, okay. Why the decision to just sort of like David Lynchian it up with nonsense visuals that like, well, what does that mean? And then you're like, you tap your fingers. It's what you want it to mean.
Right.
No, you're obviously trying to tell me something. Just tell me what you're trying
just
to tell me.
Take my hand and lead me to it. Nobody has time.
No. And when we were about to watch it, I said, well, do you want to switch over to Silo? I mean, The Changeling. And like, it's the same thing that happened with Silo too. Like, and this was before I watched it. Like I somehow had a premonition that it was going to take me to a place where I would be like, what the fuck? Like, it's so abrupt. And I'm not going to get into details either, but it was like, wait, did they give us 8 episodes and then they held back the 9th one? But no, that was truly the end, where it's just like, someone got sick of writing it. Like, it sort of feels that way.
Mm-hmm. It felt like they were supposed to do 9. Right.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they're doing the Bible and they got through the Old Testament and they're just like, nailed Jesus across the end. They're just like, oh, what? What was that? Oh, who's Jesus? What? Cross? What? Huh?
Yes. But like not that. Only Silo, there's also, they use the Dear Edward filter on this thing too. So it looks like the entire run of the show looks like it takes place in an eternal New York autumn, like that's could be anywhere, even though there are so many scenes where I was like, that's Toronto, that park is definitely same. Toronto, like it's not New York. But anyway,
I was like, did someone forget to edit the Spadina sign, hold for giggles, out of this shot? Like, I know exactly where they're standing and it is not New York.
To take it back to Dan, the marginal yes. I feel like, especially in the first couple of episodes, Melina Matsoukas' style, and she's an executive producer on the show as well, her style as a director is perfect for a story where, like, even people who are in the experience aren't sure, like, what's a dream, what's a memory, what's a fear that you should be attuned to, what is just, you know, sleep deprivation induced psychosis, which are the witches that you should take seriously when they tie something around your wrist and tell you what not to do about it. So was that, was the look and feel of it part of what, like, kept you hooked, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a, as I said, this is an expensive show, and they really, they did very interesting things with the visuals. This is not supposed to be New York. It's supposed to be New York / Toronto. It's supposed to be like, they say it's an alternate New York where things look more like the 80s. And really, that production, look, I watched way too much of The Man in the High Castle because I loved the production design. I watched Babylon Berlin all the way through because I love the production design. And this is a, you know, that's enough to keep my interest on the screen. It's like, all right, what cool thing are they going to show me next? What interesting they're going to do me? Also, I have a high tolerance as someone who reads a lot of bad fantasy novels and, you know, modern fantasy novels for kind of things, stuff that's a little elliptical. And these, they've got big ideas and maybe they get away from them sometimes. But also, they are very clear in this. This is a fairy tale. It's not supposed to make sense. And if the problem we have is that we go in, like we all did with Lost, and say, this better have a good, tidy explanation. And I don't feel like the show has that or is going to have that. And that's okay, if you go in knowing that, then you're not being cheated. And then you know what you're getting. And if you're okay with that, you're okay with that. And you're just there for the ride. The conclusion doesn't really matter because, say, it's a fairy tale, which is a very Neil Gaiman, you know, wanking thing to say. But that's that's what they're doing here.
I get that. And when I read what the full description was, when I found out it was not The Changeling, the horror movie from the 70s with George C. Scott, and realized it was this, I was like, oh no, because this is not my jam at all. As Dave said, those three first episodes really tricked me. Like, after the first one, I was like, well, it wasn't boring. Like, it wasn't. I mean, to me, I get that this was maybe for us an issue of expectations, and that this was made for a very particular kind of a viewer who's going to hook into it, and that the rest of us are, like, not invited, I guess. I don't know.
I didn't have any I didn't know what this was. All I knew is it wasn't the 30s in LA Angelina Jolie story.
Right. It's not that one either.
Not that. Just, dear Mr. President, there are too many changelings in pop culture. Please eliminate two.
Dave, are you comparing this favorably to J. Michael Straczynski product? Because that's not, I don't know, man.
I've never seen the other one either. So no, I'm not. Rest assured, I am not.
You actually have. I think you talked about it on Mark One.
Not me. I didn't know what this was. So I didn't really realize it was doing this Gaiman-esque, let's bring in the old stories into the new world sort of twist on things. When it got to that point where they sort of let the overt fairy tales of old and the old gods and all these sort of things into the story, I was like, oh, this is kind of the something I enjoy. But then it got off the rails after that. And they also mixed tones, like, in a weird way that wasn't satisfying. Like, but then, like, they did this whole, like, people that live in the subway thing, and that felt like it was from a different show that was, like, it was, like, 30% funnier than what they were trying to do here or something like that.
Yeah.
Most of that fell on the captain of the underground actor who thought he was in a different show, I think. And then that seventh episode I was talking about where it turns into this one-woman play in a rundown hotel in New York City. And then there was the last episode that went, like, full hog. Let's get into the trolls of it all.
Yeah.
And it really just was like whiplash going through that, all that in the last, and it did not hold together at all at the end. And it was so disappointing because it started off so strong.
All right. Well, I have two low stakes questions to close us out with. So Dan, is the marginal yes, say anything serious that you want to get on the record before we get into the ridiculous nonsense of me.
Look, I think there's also something to be said for the fact we've got this fantasy series, this, you know, modern urban fantasy series that, and we are centering Black people and brown people. And it's very kind of very consciously multiracial. There's a lot of interethnic couples, and that's great. And, you know, it's, look, Black people need their own shitty fantasy stories, and I'm glad someone's giving it to them.
All right, Sarah, the first dumb question is for you. If you found an autographed To Kill a Mockingbird, would we ever see you again?
Sure.
Okay.
I'd also like to note right here that his shopping partner,
Patrice,
like, that they're changing a diaper in what I think is supposed to be the Strand. Very realistic. Thought it was a documentary. And then they want to put the, he's like, put it in with the Grisham about the dirty diaper.
Yes.
It was like, I wish I liked the show more because parts of it I really like. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to note that that's where I would also put a dirty diaper.
All right. Finally, once you find out an acquaintance has chosen a restaurant where they're going to make you borrow a jacket to wear while you're there, how fast do you turn around and leave? Dan?
Yeah, I turn around and leave when we get to the, oh yeah, every entree is $75 and up. Like, yes. No, I don't got time for this. Come
right.
on.
I don't care how fairy tale this New York is. Just, bitch, go to any diner that can make a decent grilled cheese. That's all of them.
Just wait for restaurant week. Come on. That's just going to be $29.99. It's fine.
It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
So I watched BS High, and I don't want to give the false impression I'm in my jock era because the only sports-related media that I am interested in, A, airs on HBO, B, is produced by Adam McKay, and C, contains hardly any actual sports. All of that said, from the house of Winning Time comes this HBO documentary, and people who follow youth and college football. I know which sport it is. Probably already know the story. In 2021, an extremely wealthy boarding school for athletes that's called IMG Academy played a game on ESPN against the Bishop Sycamore Centurions. And after Bishop Sycamore got absolutely destroyed, journalists started looking into the school and found out there is no school. A lot of these guys who were playing in high school games were well outside the age of eligibility. And the team's head coach, Roy Johnson, was an extremely shady individual. And even if you do already know the story, I think there's probably still a lot here for you. Co-directors Trayvon Free and Martin Desmond Rowe, who previously made the documentary Two Distant Strangers Together, get multiple interviews with Johnson, who is an absolutely fascinating sociopath. There are multiple moments where I was like, does he not have a lawyer to tell him not to talk about any of this stuff? But eventually we find out at least one of his lawyers is suing him for non-payment. So the film lays out the whole process of how the scam got as far as it did. It has interviews with various people who tried to raise the alarm before anyone ever got on ESPN. It does its nicest work, I think, with interviews with the players and their parents who were absolutely conned by Johnson. But Johnson himself is the draw. It is chilling to watch him talk and see exactly how his patter would have worked on so many people who should have known better. And apparently Kevin Hart's production company is also working on a docuseries about the story. It seems inevitable there will be a scripted version at some point as well. So I'll just throw out my suggestion that Brian Tyree Henry play Johnson. Mm-hmm. I think he would be really great switching between winning charm and scary anger, which we definitely see from Roy in this. So I don't want to say too much about it, but it's really good. Dave watched it as well.
Basketball is the one with the round one that bounces. If you try to bounce a football, it usually bounces back and hits you in the crotch. That's
Thanks,
how you
Dave.
Can remember.
More George C. Scott's big week for George C. Scott.
Ah, my groin.
On Extra Hot Grade. For my plug, I wrote about the end of another HBO show, How To with John Wilson, and that's at Cracked, and we'll link that in the show notes.
Mr. Dan Cassino, what have you been watching on TV recently?
So very briefly, I've been watching the second season of The Wheel of Time. It's currently halfway through. The first season was covered on this very show. I was on here with Dave talking about it. This is a show I have no idea who is supposed to be liking, watching, or enjoying the show. It is made for me and the other maybe 100,000 people who read all 14 books of this famously complex series of 14 books averaging about 1,000 pages long each with 4,000 characters.
Come on! That's too much.
So they are building this thing in this show. If you are... Everyone I know who read the books loved the show because, like, it's a giant mess because they're trying to take 4,000 characters. They're condensing, like, four characters into one person. They're trying to make it work, and there's no way on God's green earth it's going to work, but they are spending so much money on it. The first season, it was basically the characters wearing one set of clothes wandering around in the woods outside of Ljubljana, which looked great. I went to Ljubljana the next year. Now they have more money somehow for the second season, so Rosamund Pike gets three outfits an episode. They're all over the place. It looks great. Who's it for? I don't know, but I'm enjoying it. I've also been watching Iron Chef because the original Japanese Iron Chef got added on to Peacock. So you can now watch it there. This show I have a great deal of affection for. My parents are both chefs. And one of the ways I connected them as a teenager, we'd watch Iron Chef and they would shout at the screen of how upset they were about what was going on the screen. The Iron Chef also, in research my own and of others, has proven to be one of the most important shows in American cultural history because it changed Food Network from being a show about Rachel Ray pretending to cook potatoes in 30 minutes to people actually like having these high level level competition, intense competition shows. Food Network within 10 years was all competition, and it changed the way people view cooking. Cooking became, rather than a feminine activity, now is seen as a masculine activity about risk and fire and meat and Ilardo and all this stuff. So it's this culturally important show, and I watched it again, and I had forgotten that Iron Chef Japanese is just professional wrestling. And it's not like any other cooking show, which are very serious. It's professional wrestling. Everyone's got costumes. They have rival schools that they go into and meet with. And the rival schools send people to take down the Iron Chef that they hate. And they even preview Bobby Flay's entire career. He shows up in the year 2000 as a complete heel, where it is pro wrestling. So he's the heel, and they are Iron Chef Japanese talks about how he is not a chef. He is disqualified from ever being considered a chef. And they smack talk each other, and it's wonderful. And this is now Bobby Flay's career for 25 years being the heel on Food Network. It's a wonderful show. It's mostly background TV. There are a lot of weird things. And because it's professional wrestling, it is riding the line. Is this a work or is this a shoot? You don't quite know. Sometimes they don't show you the scores because I think the Iron Chef's lost that one, but they thought they should win anyway. Who knows? It's a lot of fun and culturally important. Should absolutely be appreciated.
Do you remember when Iron Chef first started popping up? What a weird kind of mindfuck it was to watch something. And now if you watch it, it's like, oh, that's cute. Mm-hmm. Pop culture accelerates so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and just to think that that was so out there at one point in time. Guy just bites a fucking pepper. Who does that?
Okay, but then they also are taking a bunch of eels and well, we have to marinate them. So throw the live eels into a bucket of sake and we'll leave them in there for a couple hours. And then for an hour, then we'll pull them out. For my plugs, I, of course, am the scorekeeper and write a bunch of the questions on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, produced by our own David T. Cole. We have more fun than should be humanly allowed. Also, in my other world, I do have a book out recently called Gender Threat with my writing partner and life partner, Yasmin Pesan Casino. The book is basically men, but why? I mean, really, why? And we have a lot of fun. My research mostly consists of scaring men and seeing what happens. And when you scare straight white guys, mostly bad stuff, but bad stuff is always good for my career. It makes a great gift for a very, very, very specific audience. So if you are that audience, you know who you are.
Make me a manly pile.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Murder, She Wrote. I have been getting really into it lately. I don't think I ever saw any of these when they aired. If it weren't on a babysitting night, I didn't see it contemporaneously. But I started watching them recently, and they are perfect before bed TV. They're distracting enough and diverting enough to be interesting, but not so much that you get overstimulated and you can't sleep. It's also a Hey, It's That Guy fest. I was telling Tara the other day that the last episode I watched had about three Hey, It's That Guys over and above Martin Cove and Martha Ray. They do not make out in this, but that is never impossible on Murder, She Wrote. Random love matches are never off the table. And I started Googling around for various Murder, She Wrote bingo cards, and some of the squares are amazing. MurderSheDrank.com links to an auto-generated card so that you can play along either with them or just for your own enjoyment. Squares include Just Get a Divorce, Lego hair, that's not consensual. When people are more uncomfortable talking about sex than seeing a murdered dead body, silk peignoir, squinting used to communicate. It's really fun. And I guess it just speaks to the show's predictability, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. There's something to be said for a show that you can kind of calibrate the level, or it self-calibrates to the level of soothing or hilarious or distracting that you need it to. It's kind of chameleonic, and I love that about it. And also, there's just a series of amazing scarves and brooches on our heroine, J.B. Fletcher, that I love.
What's Lego hair?
Lego hair is that 80s, looks like it snaps on.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You've seen it in Columbo as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Like the lady from Bob Newhart show.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Boy.
Exactly. Receptionist. Yeah.
Okay. I will note, Sarah, for purposes of our sister Patreon podcast, I'm seeing on the Murder, She Wrote IMDb, Christine Belford, Catherine Cannon, mm-hmm. our good friend Wings Hauser, Chad Everett. There's a lot of Starverse elders, let's say, in the cast list here.
Yeah, so I think that we should bingo that up for our sister podcast. And as we were talking about this on Slack, me and Tara, another reboot was announced yesterday as we're recording this by Collider. It's going to be a movie. The last time that this was announced, it took forever to not go anywhere. We were shocked to realize that the putative Octavia Spencer version of Murder, She Wrote was announced in 2013.
Wow.
And then in 2014, they were like, yeah, that didn't work out. Like, I just feel like maybe they should not try it with this. Like, I know it seems like fertile IP, and it was, but just leave it because it was perfect the way it was. You can watch it before bed. You can watch it while splitting an edible with your cousin and playing a drinking game. It's very seldom not adaptable to whichever mindset is relevant to you.
If they are going to reboot it, they should do it in a way that pays homage to the time period in which it lived. So if you had Son of Columbo and Daughter of Murder, She Wrote in another show together, then I feel like all the pieces fall into place. Like, embrace the 70s, 80s of it all.
Yeah, agree. Would you like to read about an IRL murder? Good news. I have a whole bookstore for that. It's called Exhibit B Books. You can find it at exhibitbbooks.com. I also have a whole tag called Just Get a Divorce. So all that stuff, very relevant to Murder, She Wrote. Murder, She Read, I guess. Could be the alternate name of the shop. Come on by. We'd love to see you.
On Extra, Extra Hot Crate this Friday, we've got The Morning Show Season 3 discussion, and we're welcoming back Christina Tucker, because we have to, if we're talking about The Morning Show.
That's right.
So she'll be there for that, and also Ask Yeshe as usual, 15 Seconds of Fame, and extra credit topic this week is Tara forces everyone to watch Cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue.
That's right.
And let me just say, mwah.
Yeah.
80s perfection or 90s perfection.
It's George C. Scott week on Extra Hot Crate. We didn't plan it. It just worked out that way.
Man.
I was so excited for that show as a kid and so disappointed, but I was looking for, I circled it in the TV guide. Oh.
Aww.
Hate these reminders that you're just slightly younger than us, Dan, even though you're a college professor.
And then right here on EHG Prime next week, we are going to talk about The Gold from the UK with Alison Lohuff, a show which I discovered today that I made happen.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Oh, that creepy backwards music can only mean one thing. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Nonak. Now, to remind you, a Nonak is the opposite of the canon. We're looking for a particularly bad episode of an otherwise good TV show. Presenting this week, it's Eleanor. Take it away, Eleanor.
Hey, Extra Hot, Great, and Valued Guest. This is Eleanor, and I am submitting for induction into, or banishment to, the Nonak, Project Runway, Season 13, Episode 5, asterisk, A Suitable Twist. At first, when I thought about submitting this episode, I thought, well, everybody knows this episode. It's the Red Robin episode of the Red Robin season.
Red Robin.
Yum.
So should I just let the episode speak for itself? But instead of doing that, I'd like to point out a few reasons that this episode is in fact bad and Nonak worthy. Number one, the level of attenuation of the
Red Robin.
Yum.
tie-in to this episode's challenge is totally unforgivable. An honestly depressing moment in this episode is the very beginning when the designers go to
Red Robin
to get the challenge. They meet the, quote, vice president of brand transformation of
Red Robin.
Yum.
Who gives us what is literally a 30-second ad spot about Red Robin burgers. Tim Gunn's reactions in this scene really make it seem like someone was off screen pointing a gun at him and holding a sign that said, look like you're impressed. The
Red Robin
challenge represents the way these designers will disrupt fashion the same way
Red Robin
has disrupted the gourmet burger. Do you get it? Number two, everything about this episode is totally gonzo, so I especially enjoy that the burgers and the cocktails being held by the guys in the suits just disappear at some point. Number three, there is not a lot of juicy conflict in this episode. There are two designers that are doing motorcycle jackets, but you don't really have any information that suggests you should be rooting for one person or that anyone, you know, cribbed from the other. So you kind of just have to watch them glare at one another while they make motorcycle jackets. And the eventual loser in this episode is just in a sad battle with an ugly suit. I do think it's fun that the winner of the previous week's challenge gets to pick everyone's fabric, so I'll give it that. Finally, the obviousness of who's going to win and who's going home is telegraphed so strongly in this episode. And because everyone has to spend so much of their time tearing up the suits to turn them into usable fabric, a lot of the looks really do just look rushed and bad. So this comes down in a lot of ways to just technical expertise and who pulled it off. And Amanda definitely has technical expertise. I will give her that. However, her hippie chic designs are pretty blah, I have to admit, and she designed this dress as though she'd been hired by the FBI to dress a white college student trying to infiltrate the Black Panthers. So this episode does not exactly come from the golden age of Project Runway, but I do think it sets itself apart even from those as no-knack worthy. Project Runway's attempts to tie its increasingly cheapo brand endorsements in with the show culminate in the gag of this season, which is that the designers will get to create an accessory for
Red Robin
servers. But the direct involvement of
Red Robin
in this particular episode, including the designers munching on bottomless fries while they sketch, is the nadir of the form, in my opinion. When I went back to watch this to prepare a presentation, I thought, surely I will be reminded of the actual connection between my memory of these designers sitting in a
Red Robin
and the actual challenge. But there really isn't one. Even the judges seem kind of bored, except the YouTube sensation, who is one of the guest judges. When Nina says it looks like she's the vagina superhero, I honestly almost turned this one off. This episode is bad, but it's also memorable. And that's why I think it deserves a place in the no-knack. Thank you.
Dave, thank you for that
gorgeous
edit. And thank you, Eleanor. Wow, that was gorgeous. Dan, please start off the discussion because you selected this from our list of submissions.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Project Runway. I appreciate going back to experience some old Project Runway. The great presentation. Yeah, look, this is a bad episode. I mean, yeah, we know from the beginning who the winners are. We know from very soon who the losers are. You know, the fact that Amanda, we know she's going to be fine because Heidi Klum, I guess she was watching all the Anna Torv shows at the time because she loves Fringe. And so any Fringe, she's in it. That's all she's going to do. Fine, we know who's going to win. We know who's going to lose. The losing looks are really bad. The question is, okay, so yeah, this is a low for Project Runway, but the lows do get lower. I mean, yeah, this is bad. Is it worse than the Belk accessory wall? Remember Belk?
Oh.
This is the Aldo accessory wall, though, so at least Belk is a department store.
Pretty bad.
Belk with vitamin R?
Yes.
Red Robin's a bad tie-in, but is it worse than the Dixie Cup tie-in they eventually did? It's hard for me to say. So on a technical aspect, some of the outfits, all the outfits are kind of blah. Nothing's that great. You know who the winner is. So it's definitely a bad episode. My only question is whether this is so close to the bottom that this is actually notably bad. Because honestly, it seems like 12 through 17 are real rough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I go next?
Sure.
A rare Dave not waiting till the last so he could say the least moment.
Yes.
When this came up and it was the Red Robin episode of the Red Robin season, I didn't realize it was a whole season, but this is an episode that I have seen before, one of a handful that I actually like watch. And I think it has something to do with the Fug Girls being on this show.
I think we watched the premiere of this season.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that you have seen this one. You've just seen people talk about it.
No, I have seen this one because I remember Tim Gunn talking about eating delicious food at Red Robin.
Well, play that clip because I clipped it.
All right, designers, you will have 30 minutes to sketch inside and enjoy some of the wonderful food that Red Robin has to offer. And then we'll head off to Mood.
He says it in a way that I'm not sure that Tim Gunn doesn't think that they are serving Robin.
I agree.
They got a robin rotisserie in the bag, and you get a robin, and you eat the robin with sometimes pineapple slices on it. Like, it had that sort of tone to it.
Or you have to put a napkin over your head. It's like the ortolan eaters.
That's right. Yes.
Buntings.
The really super forced guy who comes in, the brand transition ambassador, and all the servers with their Herb Tarlick-esque get-ups, and then you had to turn something into it. It was all so forced and so dumb that this is an episode of Project Runway that I genuinely enjoyed. This show kind of is boring to me just because I don't care about fashion stuff. Also, I don't understand it. I don't have a vocabulary for it. It just washes over me when it's in the room. But this one, everybody was so uncomfortable with what was going on that I was like, ooh, this is good. This is sort of like Inside Baseball. Somebody fucked up and there wasn't time to fix it kind of episode. Especially the bits where they're actually at the Red Robin and Tim Gunn is flailing around.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting question where it's like, is this because I'm a lesbian? Where it like it could a case could be made that it's canon worthy or that it's known act worthy potentially. Right. Anyway, Sarah, why don't you go next?
Red Robin, yum. Like that would be in the like micro canon or like the canon of scenes or whatever for sure. And this is a bad episode, but the problem, as Dan pointed out, is that this is just a bad. Like, the season is just kind of bad. It's just kind of a C+. Like, the Aldo accessory wall, the Mary Kay makeup studio. Like, yeah. It's just, you're starting. It's like that line in House of Mirth where Wharton is talking about how Lily Bart just keeps recovering her footing a step lower every time. And it's like, oh, God, what is happening? A YouTuber judge, like, this is the beginning of the time when Nina Garcia started talking about Instagram moments. And it was like, how do you do, fellow designers? Like, oh, please stop. You're trying too hard. Tim looks like he's about to break out in hives. They do the selection of the suits and like who gets which fabric in the parking lot with the sun beating down on them. Like everything about it is just not good. There's not really anybody to root for that much. Like this was the Keeney season and I liked him, but there's no real villains. Poor Hernan is like, he's just screwed from the jump. And Tim is starting to be in that phase where he's making observations, but not giving any actionable advice the way Christian would. And it made me want to scream that he just kept repeating to Hernan, like, well, but it's not fabric. You can't treat it like fabric. It's not fabric. Like, tell him what to do instead. Shit. And then he's bleeding everywhere. It's not good.
Yes.
I like that transition. If you haven't watched the show, he dies.
Yeah, he does die. But not before giving us this wonderful clip where I think that editing is trying to make him seem like he's being pissy and unfair to Sandhya, but he's just flailing around and he gives us this wonderful sound drop.
Sandhya pick up the disgusting beige and brown tuxedo and I'm very want to kill her.
I'm very want to kill her. I just feel like I'm going to carry that sound drop around or like make it into my ringtone. The episode overall is like representatively bad of the season, but you can't put a whole season in the canon and you also can't put Red Robin Yum just by itself in the Nonak, excuse me. So I just don't entirely know what I'm going to do. But yeah, this brought me back to a place with this franchise, which I had some issues with the season that just finished, but I thought overall it was good and understood what the show does well and why everybody's there. this was when it was kind of in the wilderness about that stuff. And I had not missed Heidi or Tim at all, which really tells you something about that franchise and how parts of it have aged. Excellent presentation, though, Eleanor and Dave working in tandem. And Dave, you're absolutely right. Tim totally thinks that they're cooking robins and or babies in there. So yeah.
Here's the bad thing about Red Robin. I'm a man of unsophisticated taste. I will eat at a family restaurant. No problem. No worries. I'm not above it. You go to Red Robin, you get, oh, bottomless fries. I'm going to make a pig of myself and give myself a heart attack tomorrow. They give you three fries with every little bowl they bring. You just have to like say, as soon as you walk 10 paces away from the table, assume I want more fries because it's going to take me that long to eat these three fries. Just give me a full, like at least the first one. If you're going to come in with the unlimited fries, the first plate of fries, give me like a normal order of fries worth so I don't have to pester you three more times to get a normal order of fries worth.
All right, so Red Robin, that franchise is going in the no-nack of fast food, but possibly this episode is not going in the no-nack.
You just have to have podcast. Order strat, that's all.
Got it. Yep, order strat is important.
I do want to speak in defense of Red Robin. I enjoy Red Robin. I probably go maybe three times a year.
I thought he was going to say a week. Anybody else thought he was going to say a week?
I did.
I get the burger with the pineapple slices. It is called the Bonzai Burger. I've been eating since I was 10 years old. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Not the same one. I order a new one each time.
Sure.
And I agree with Red Robin. I don't have a huge problem with it. It's just it's not the place for high fashion.
No,
that's the thing. I mean, when we got to the – Sarah, I assume you're done.
Yes, I am.
When we got to this part of the episode, the fries looked so good to me. And I was like, we unfortunately are going to have to go to Red Robin soon because of this episode.
Not enough places do steak fries.
Agree. Yeah. And I realize that's a controversial opinion. So, get on the Discord and let's start a fry conversation because this is the kind of thing that turns brother against brother. Sewing machine. The issue with this, and I take everyone's point, this was a dark period of the show. And it especially looks even darker, as Sarah said, having just finished a current season in the new era, where what I was most struck by this time was like, it feels so rushed. I don't love an extra long episode of a show normally, but when at this point in the competition, there were like a dozen designers still. And so for them all to be squishing this competition into just an hour, which is, you know, effectively whatever it is, 43 minutes a show, it felt so rushed compared to what we're getting now. And Sarah, I also agree that Christian is a better mentor than Tim. And I don't know if that was always the case because Christian actually is a designer, whereas Tim is, you know, not to say just a teacher, but a teacher. So he's like, I think maybe trying to be more Socratic with it, whereas Christian's more like,
sure,
turn that hat around and do something with the eye. And then that becomes the only thing anyone cares about in Bishmi's winning look, just saying. So yeah, that was rough too. But the main thing, and this is like when Eleanor said it's the Red Robin season, I had forgotten until we got to the pod in the middle where they're running down all of the prizes that people are going to get. Oh my God, they were the sponsor for the whole season of this fashion show. Like, it was just such a marker of how shitty the Lifetime years were that, like, this was the best they could do. And by the time you get to, like, wait, they also get a Lexus? Like, why isn't there more stuff happening with Lexus, an actual, at least, luxury brand?
It's a Lexus, but it's painted like a burger.
It's actually someone named Alexis. She comes and like just helps you run errands and stuff. It's not a Lexus because Lexus was like, we'll let them be confused about it, but it's just someone's cousin.
Yeah. Yeah. The Mary Kay Color Design Studio is also a very dark-sided phrase. Like, it's just so cursed, that part of it. It's too rushed. It feels also really mean-spirited. Like, this is Mitchell's reaction when Sandia assigns him his suit.
No, not the loop.
Mitchell, this is for you.
That bitch. Seriously, right now, I hate it.
And then Hernan also calls her a bitch later.
Polyester. Thank you, Sandy, again, bitch.
Wasn't this a subplot in this season? Is her being bullied and like weeping on the runway? And
I think
feel
that's
like Heidi
right.
had to have an intervention or like scold them.
Yeah.
Which is like, this is not Like, yeah. I'm all for bitchy drama, but Jesus Christ.
I just didn't get the impression that she was calling them bitch back. You know what I'm saying? Like, the second time she turns around and flips him off. But it still doesn't feel like you have that relationship where you're, like, calling each other bitch in a playful way. Mm-hmm. It seems malicious.
Yeah.
And Eleanor also brought this up, but, like, the YouTube sensation vlogger, whatever her name was, Bethany Mota, showing up to this judging job, looking like she came straight from Walmart. No offense if you shop at Walmart. They've got some good stuff. But, like, this is Project Runway. Like, you should look better than this. She looked like she was from the mall. Again, like the Red Robin sponsorship, it all adds up to, like, your projection of authority in this space is just gone in this season.
Yeah.
And the results of this one were, like, even one of the winning looks looked like shit to me. Like, the Keenies, it was a good idea, but every time they got close, you could see the hem was uneven. It's like, and I will say one thing I missed that I forgot they even did was the close inspection of the top and bottom looks.
Yeah, I did. I missed that too, actually.
Bring that back. I think that's good. But I take Eleanor's point that, like, this is the worst episode of a bad season. Like, I hear what you guys are saying, but, like, my problem with reality shows is when the season is over, my mind erases. It's like shakes out like a Netflix sketch. And so I don't have any memories except for, like, the main high points and low points. And this is a main low point for me. I mean, the parking lot aspect of it is just, it's all so down market and depressing. So for me, this is no neck worthy, but let's put it to the vote.
Let's see how it goes. All right. You already know my vote. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I can't in good conscience put it in a no neck container. So it's going to come down to you three. Dan Cassino, what say you?
Tara, I think, convinced me by reminding me that I'm pretty sure that's the Red Robin in Hackensack, New Jersey. So which had just opened at that point. So yeah, that's pretty down market. I'm going to give a yes to the no neck on this one.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, where do you fall here?
We don't have a canon of scenes and moments as of yet. So this is where this has to go. And I think this is absolutely, when people think of the dark wilderness of the Lifetime era, this is the first thing they would point to. And I think that's no-nack worthy. So well done. Yes, for me.
Tara?
For me as well. And thank you for that presentation. I loved it so much. Please, please present to us again. Great job.
I think there's another one in the chamber already from Eleanor.
Excellent.
All right, guys. So, because you didn't have the courage to really say what this episode was, which was great, we're left with this. Which is Project Runway. One Way, Project One Way, Season 13, Episode 5, A Suitable Twist. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great no nap. Congratulations.
Oh, shit.
God.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time to discover who is the winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
Besides myself, of course, Brady Bunch fans, because Eve Plum, who played Jan, has announced plans to auction off her memorabilia, including a special gift from Robert Reed.
Sure, Jan.
Sure, Jan. Auxiliary winner. One Brady Bunch fan in particular, Chris Albrecht's wife, that used to be the head of HBO, bought the house for well below market. We found out today, right before we recorded, that they got it for 42% under asking. So I guess those renovations didn't go so great.
No.
But, you know, I'm glad it's staying in the TV family. And I guess that winner really is executive salaries. Sigh.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like anytime there is a show like that, and if you bought the house, you would get there, and everything you thought would wood was just like school construction paper
sure.
and corrugated.
Oh yeah,
yes.
This and that, and everything you just breathe on a wall falls down. So
yes,
42% below sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I assume like we just like the exterior, and we're going to undo everything that HGTV did, but still, like,
oh yeah,
LA is a tough real estate market. To go for 42% under asking is wild.
Right. Mm, yeah. Who is the loser of the week, Tara?
Well, it's Drew Barrymore. So she announced last week, or the show announced, that it was going to be coming back, start taping new episodes as we're recording this Monday, September 11th, and then they would be airing starting on the 18th. And when I saw the headline, I was like, that's weird, because I, you know, it's a union show. I know one of the writers. She's been on strike this whole time. They must have gotten one of those waivers or something. And I regret to say, did not initially look into it any deeper. And then got a tip that the WGA was going to be picketing them, because that is, it's in a gray area, and she's not really doing what she should. You know, our friend Catherine speculated that she was probably threatened with cancellation if she didn't come back, because she doesn't work directly for the company. Its syndication is a whole complicated blah, blah, blah. But even if you're trying to make the argument, which she didn't in her statement about it, where she was going to practice astute humility and said, I own this decision, you know, she didn't say anything about, like, all of the rest of our crew has also been out of work and I'm thinking of them, or blah, blah, blah. Then on the day, right, had, you know, the picket was happening, people crossed the picket line to go in. The WGA people there were giving people pins, and two of them who decided to wear them in the audience were kicked out and then went and joined the picket line. So that doesn't look great. It's just turning into a whole PR nightmare. Now a bunch of other, you know, supposedly should continue to stay struck shows are like, oh, well, she broke the seal, so we guess we'll come back, like The Talk and the Jennifer Hudson Show and Sherry. And in addition to all of this, on this very day when she went back into production, was announced as the host of the National Book Awards. So now authors are also mad at her, because this is what you're doing. We thought, this is not how you support writers. Stop being like this. What's your problem? So,
Dan, you would know, is astute humility something you roll at when you create the character, or is that like a saving throw situation?
Yeah, it's a constitution saving throw.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, speaking about saving throws, do you know what time it is?
I'm not sure I do.
Dan better explain.
I don't.
Oh, it's game time.
What?
Welcome to Game Time. I have taken over from Dave on this game because I think as a guest, I should bring something to my hosts. And also because I think Dave doesn't get to play games enough. And I love when we get to have Dave play games. So I wanted to have a game that we could play that I think Dave would do, okay, let's be honest, about as well as everyone else at this game. So
okay.
That's either good or bad, depending. Mm-hmm. To get ready for spooky season, I have been watching The Walking Dead. In fact, I've been watching all of The Walking Dead shows. Mm-hmm. There are more than you think. Yeah. Oh, you think there's that many? It's 20% more than that. Mm. And it turns out lots and lots of well-known actors have been on these shows that you don't know are on these shows, because no one here watches The Walking Dead Extended Universe. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching it, and I recognize, and the problem is I am just terrible with names sometimes. So in this game, you'll have to guess the name of an actor who's been on one or more Walking Dead shows or the other show that I know them from. You'll get up to three clues to identify either the actor or the show I know them from. We'll go back and forth on those questions. And you'll get three clues, but the more clues you get, the fewer points a correct answer is worth. 3 points after one clue, 2 points, then 1 point. You can get a guess at each level, but we'll make sure to keep it moving. We do have 30 questions and a tiebreaker.
Okay.
Dave, if you could fire up the person in charge picky thingy to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. So our order is going to be Sarah, then Dave, then Tara.
Does this game have a name?
I have not named it. So okay. It is called That He's in the Walking Dead.
Perfect.
All right. Great. So we'll start with Sarah. All right. So Joe on Tales of the Walking Dead. He's that one football player who hosts America's Got Talent. Who is that guy?
Who is that guy? Is it Tiki Barber?
No. He was the sergeant on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Is it Terry Crews?
It is Terry Crews. So that Woo. Is for 2 points.
Nice.
Yay.
All right. On to Dave.
Yep.
So Madison Lintz played Sophia on the main show, and she's Maddie on that one B-plus freebie cop show. Do you know the one?
All right. She's Maddie on the cop show, and she was what character on?
She plays Sophia on the main show.
Sophia.
And she's Maddie on that one B-plus freebie cop show. You know
I
the one?
Maybe I know the character you're talking about, but I can't place it. So freebie cop, donut guys.
No, Dave, it's the one with Titus Welliver and Mimi Rogers.
Oh, boy.
You know who Titus Welliver is.
I do know Titus Welliver, Mimi Rogers. But is that, wait, freebie? Yeah, but there's a couple of them. Is this a Bosch? Hey, all right.
It is Bosch.
Wait.
Wasn't that an Amazon Prime show?
It's actually Bosch Legacy, but we'll give you with Bosch.
Oh, wow.
I see now.
Will we?
Dan's generous.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I can't.
I
wouldn't, but Dan does. And I can't. I'm not going to force Dan not to give me that point. Points.
Because they don't, even on freebie, they don't always mark, it's not always marked Bosch Legacy, so.
Okay.
All right, Andar. Negan on the main show and on Walking Dead Dead City, he played Sam and Dean's dad on Supernatural.
Sure did.
Who was that guy?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
3 points.
I just saw him in Fall, a very creepy movie on Stars. If anyone has Stars and you want to watch something for spooky season, Fall made me sick to my stomach.
Leaves changing colors. Pumpkin spice everywhere.
There, Carrie Condon was Clara on the main show, and she was Rosie on that one show, the one with Dennis Farina and Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah, Dennis Farina and Dustin Hoffman. Carrie Condon was on that.
Oh, Unsolved Mysteries, the reboot.
No. It was the one where the horses kept dying.
Oh, that thing. Luck? Was that the name of that?
Wow, nice.
Luck.
Jesus.
On to Dave.
Yep.
Elizabeth in The World Beyond, she was Gorin's psychologist on Criminal Intent.
Yeah. Is there more? Please.
She played Megan's mother, Marie, in Mad Men.
Oh. No, I'm not. No, don't have it. Gonna need a little bit more here, please.
Her name starts with a J.
Janice.
Janice Brioche.
Julia Ormond.
Oh.
Julia Ormond. On Tara.
Yep.
So Mo Collins was Sarah on Fear the Walking Dead, and she did more than 150 episodes of that one sketch comedy show.
Mad TV.
Mad TV is correct. Sarah Blair on Tales of the Walking Dead. She played Rita on The Staircase.
She played who on The Staircase?
Frida.
With an F?
Frida.
With an F.
Oh, God. Jeez. Her. Parker Posey?
Wow. Hey!
Good for three. Parker Posey. Ooh,
there
done.
Really are more Walking Dead shows than I was aware of.
I know.
Like, quite a few more. Tales of the Walking Dead?
Well, she was sucking and fucking on Walking Dead. No, that was her line. That was her big meme line in The Staircase. Sorry.
That's right.
So, Dave, John Bernthal played Shane on the main show.
Mm-hmm.
He was the lead on that one Showtime series that was based on a movie.
Yes. Thank you. That one weekend of watching this all. This is American Gigolo.
3 points.
Nice.
So Edwin on The World Beyond and the main show, he was General Grabaston on Space Force.
Oh, God. That does not help me.
Oh, boy.
David Koechner.
Oh, good guess.
No. He was Stan, the FBI agent on The Americans.
Oh, Noah Emmerich. Or Emmerich.
What was the name of that character from Space Force
again? General Grabaston. Jesus. They all had stupid names like that. God, that show was bad.
Yeah.
Sarah, so Denise Crosby was Mary on the main show, and she was the security chief who got killed by the Armis on that one space show.
Space. that one space show, which is, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Wow.
3 points.
Well done.
I thought that was Dave Bate. All right. So Dave, Maze on the main show.
I call him Corn.
Peacemaker's dad?
Yeah.
You know who plays Peacemaker's dad.
Say that again. So I was too busy setting up my joke.
Maze on the main show.
Concord.
He plays Peacemaker's dad?
Yeah. What is his name? Oh, no. Here's the problem. Here's the big problem with this. I will give you the wrong name, and the name I'm probably going to give you is the guy from... who is like Aquaman's rival in Aquaman.
Oh!
That's the name I'm going to give you when I get it wrong. I'm guessing his name is Robert Patrick.
Yeah!
Hey!
Who am Dave's I? Who's, first who's, three-pointer, I
who's
think.
The other guy? No, nice. I got one.
Patrick Wilson is the other
guy. Patrick Wilson.
Yeah, he's a local. He's all over the place in Montclair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Phew. All right, Tara. So... Danai Gurira plays Michonne on the main series and The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Mm-hmm. What?
She was...
she that's was on a spinoff that, with Rick. Come on, guys.
She was on that one New Orleans show that Dave liked.
Oh, Tremé.
Hey, that question's not entirely accurate.
You talk about it all the time, Dave. I thought you liked it. Sarah, so what? Just a Commonwealth soldier showed up on one episode of the main show. I recognize her because she was Sherilyn... on that Disney Plus John Stamos show, Big Shot.
Sarah's favorite
that's
show.
That's not going to help. Next.
No, she was Shirley on Community.
That also doesn't help. Next.
Her name starts with a Y.
Yvette something. I don't know. Sorry.
Yvette Nicole Brown. Oh. Very close. All right, Dave. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, Picky gotcha. Mm. Samantha Morton was Alpha on the main show and D on Tales of the Walking Dead. And she plays a French queen on that one Stars show.
I don't even remember which one this is. They had so many.
Mm-hmm. Is this... Oh, I have like an image in my head of Tara using the Stars app sometime in the past and this being the hero image on it.
Yeah.
And it's got some name that is like, oh, that could have been the CW show. It could have been one of the Snow White movie titles. It's got something like that. I'm going to say it's called The White Queen.
It's the one about Catherine de' Medici.
Yeah, right.
Just get your last hint.
Is this the Borgias?
No, Dave, the one with the Borgias is just the Borgias.
Borgias, I know.
No, it's called the something queen.
Fuck. I was almost right. All right. The Winter Queen. No, that's a movie or something. Okay.
Borgias.
The Serpent Queen?
The Serpent Queen, yes. All right, last one before a score break. Tara.
Yes.
So, Dr. Everett on Tales of the Walking Dead, mm-hmm. He played Mike Monroe on Northern Exposure?
Mike? No, he had some Italian name. This is wrong, but I'm going to just say Paul Provenza.
That's what I would have done.
No, he was on ER, but he left, and then he came back in the last season.
Sherry Stringfield.
The helicopter.
His name starts with an A.
Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards.
How did he come back in the final season? He was deceased.
They're flashbacks.
He was the helicopter.
Oh, okay. Sarah. He was a transformer. Well, he didn't die. He just transformed.
So halfway through, after 15 questions, Tara's in lead with 12 points. Sarah's close behind with 10, and Dave has 8. So a very tight game.
All right. Look at that. Running the game and keeping score. Dang, mm-hmm. You do both. I can't.
I didn't realize I didn't have to.
Yeah.
All right, back to Sarah for the start of the second half. So John Glover was Teddy on Fear the Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, Dead in the Water, a Fear the Walking Dead spin-off miniseries.
Come on.
It wasn't. Lies.
Now you're just making shit up.
I literally thought there was 3 shows, and that was it. And we've heard at least 6 different titles.
Oh,
so far.
Yes.
There were 3 different spin-offs of Fear the Walking Dead, so... So John Glover, he was the dad of a bad guy on that one long-running superhero show?
He was the dad of a bad guy. You're the bad of a dad guy. Long-running superhero show called Smallville.
Yeah!
3 points. Yeah, he was Lionel Luthor.
Sure was.
He made trains. He was a trained empire guy.
Now time for question number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Yeah, Spread Eagle. Call him Corn.
So Dave, Evie on Tales of the Walking Dead, she was Lana on Greek.
Yep. Oh, you need the actress name. Good luck. Athena.
No. She was the economist Sloan on The Newsroom.
Oh, Vicky.
I don't know. I'm going to need the last one, and it better be rhymes with, and then the first letters are different.
Her name starts with an O.
The Oracle.
No, that is Olivia Munn. I did not realize she was on Greek. I guess she's
really
been very
I didn't remember that either, and I watched every episode of that show.
Wow.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
So Aldous Hodge is Mike on an episode of the main show, and he's the electronics guy Alec on that one heist show.
Leverage. From a man animal.
Question 19.
No, 19.
19.
Oh, sorry. It was too busy.
Yeah, I was too busy laughing at the Battlefield Earth joke. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, Sarah, so the Croat on The Walking Dead Dead City, he was the chief of staff on Madam Secretary?
That's nice. Timothy Daly, that's not it, but...
No, he was Governor Devlin on Oz.
Oh, Zelko Ivanek?
Good.
Don't at me.
I think that's right.
I think that's right, yeah. So Dave,
you knew who I meant.
Yeah.
Thora Birch plays Gamma on the main show, and she was one of the kids in that early 90s show based on a Ron Howard movie.
A Ron Howard movie. Okay, I know who Thora Birch is. I know who Ron
she
Howard
was one
is.
Of the kids on that early 90s show based on a Ron Howard movie.
Early 90s show based on a Ron Howard movie. It's not Eat My Dust. Is it? Oh my God! What is it? '90s show. I don't know. You need that.
The show that it had Ed Begley Jr. as the dad and Leo DiCaprio with one of the kids.
No, I don't know what this is. And one more hint, please, Dan.
The name starts with a P.
Fuck. No, I don't know.
Fuck.
Apollo 13 babies.
A splash.
What was it?
Parenthood.
Parenthood. Had Ed Begley Jr., Leo DiCaprio, Thor Birch, David Arquette is one of the kids in there as well.
God, Diesel.
One season. So, Tara, so June on Fear the Walking Dead, she was Alex in Courting Alex, a show we all watched and enjoyed.
Is that courting or courting? Like they're hooking up to stereo.
It's a pun because it's legal.
That's, nope. Next.
Yeah, she was Dharma on Dharma and Greg.
Jenna Elfman.
And Courtney Alex wasn't a good show, but had Hugh Bonneville and Dabney Coleman. So it's the most avuncular energy you can possibly get in your show.
Yeah, oh my God.
Wow. All right, Sarah. So Matt Frewer was Logan on Fear the Walking Dead. And he was the talking head on that one cyberpunk show.
Max Headroom.
3 points.
Well done.
I was going to say Crossfire.
Dave, Tammy Rose Sutton on the main show. She plays Sandy on the morning show.
You know, I just watched half of the morning show season 3 last night in preparation for Extra Extra Great this week, and I don't know who Sandy is.
I don't know who Sandy is.
Oh, okay.
I don't either.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll need another hint, please, Dan.
She starred in Grace Under Fire.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
oh.
Who is that? I know her. Grace Under Fire is not the theme song, but it's a brain exercise to get me to Brett Brettler. Yeah!
2 points.
Yeah. She's Bradley's mother in the morning show.
Right.
I remember that now, but I would not have remembered that she had a name or that it was Sandy.
Kara. Yeah. Maggie Grace plays Althea on Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, lucky them.
She played Shannon and was really annoying on that one show until Anna shot her.
Yeah, Lost.
Sarah, Roy on the main show, he was right. Officer Dewey on Southland.
Oh, a Sarah show.
If anybody needed to get this question, it's Sarah, world's number one Southland fan. The old Southie herself, Sarah D. Bunting.
I hope it's Cudlitz. Is it Cudlitz, comma Michael? No.
Oh. Okay.
No, no. Sorry, he was really big in the 80s. And he was Paul on Animal Kingdom.
Another
Paul?
Paul on Animal Kingdom, yeah. He's really big in the 80s.
This is between y'all.
You mean Pope? He wasn't really big in the 80s, that guy. Paul on Animal Kingdom. Shit. I mean, Hatosi?
No, no, his name starts with a C.
Con Katosi? I don't know. Who is this?
That is C. Thomas Howell.
Oh, right! Shit, I completely forgot he was on Animal Kingdom.
I felt like I could read your name starts with a C when you said that.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, Southland Hive.
C doesn't stand for child, does it?
No.
No.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
So yeah. Dave, Paul Calderon was Alejandro on Fear the Walking Dead. And he has a small role as Lieutenant Perez on that one New York-based police procedural, The Family One.
Oh, The Family One. Family values, giving tickets. Is this, I only know this, if it's right, I only know this via Sarah D. Bunting. Mm-hmm. Is this Blue Bloods? Yeah!
Yeah! Woo!
He was also just in Justified City Primeval. He was like the dirty
guy. He was also on Bosch.
Yeah, Jimmy Robertson on Bosch.
He's got a lane, sounds like.
He's the guy in Pulp Fiction who says, my name's Paul, that's between y'all.
Oh. One more question before we do a score break for everyone's last item. So Tony on Walking Dead, The World Beyond, mm-hmm. he's a Second City guy. He played the CNN anchor, Greg, on Veep.
Greg? Next.
No, he was Pete on 30 Rock.
Scott adds it.
All right. Time, one more score before we go into everyone's last question. At this point, Dave has 13, Sarah has 18, Tara has it evened up, is it taken away at 22, but we'll play through anyway.
Isn't the last question worth 10? I thought I heard you say that earlier.
That's fine.
So, Sarah, Ruben Blades played Daniel on Fear the Walking Dead. And he was Dr. Cabranes on that one super dark medical show from 2000.
That one super dark medical show from 2000, which I feel like we covered and it lasted like 3 episodes. And was that the one that Michelle Forbes was on? What the fuck was that thing called? I don't know. Does it matter? Hint.
The one with the show with Andre Brower and Rona Mitra.
I was actually going to guess that.
Oh.
Oh, shit. Was it dark, though? Was it Gideon's Crossing? Let's just get that out of the way.
Gideon's Crossing. Jesus.
Oh, nice, that's co-op. Not the what I thought it was called.
Nicely done, Sarah.
Was there another one at the same time called City of Angels?
That was before.
That was before.
Okay. I think.
What is the one I'm thinking of with Michelle Forbes and like Peter Berg in it?
Star
though?
Trek.
Oh, is that like Kingdom Hospital or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that was the Dutch import that lasted like 4 episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Dave.
Yeah.
So Glenn on the main show.
Yeah.
You know, he voices the main character on Invincible.
Yeah. Steven Yeun. Right, yeah, points.
Strong finish.
5 Tara. So Peter Jacobson plays the rabbi on Fear the Walking Dead. And he played Taub on that one medical show?
House.
All right, that wraps up regulation. Tara's taken with 25. Dave has 16. Sarah has 20. Let's play the tiebreaker just for funsies. So you may have noticed that a bunch of the people we asked about here are also on Ray Donovan, another one of your favorite shows, of course. Ray Donovan ran, as you all know, from 2013 to 2020, 7 seasons and a movie, because they're doing it right. Mm-hmm. And the main series of Walking Dead, of course, ran from 2010 until 2022, so almost coterminous. Closest without going over, how many people have credits on both shows, according to IMDb. We've gone over four major actors who have credits on both shows. Just to put it in context, there are about 900 people total credited on Ray Donovan, which ran forever and had everyone in it. So the question is, how many people are credited with both Ray Donovan and The Walking Dead? All right, David T. Cole, how many people?
Is this closest to the pin or is this Price is Right?
We'll do closest to the pin.
Okay. 57, like the sauce.
57 from Dave. Tara, what do you think?
The 38.
And Sarah?
66.
56 or 66?
66.
66.
Like the root.
Winner of our tiebreaker is Sarah, because the correct answer is 117.
Oh, holy shit.
I actually was going to guess 122, and then I was like, that's going to be way too high even for this.
Wow.
Incredible.
Ridiculous.
Nicely done.
Good job.
If I may, let's give Sarah D. Bunting a Mindy Weather call for that
okay.
one.
Okay.
So that means one for each of you.
Okay.
So far.
Ooh.
Very exciting.
Oh, good.
I'm going to correct myself. I think the dark show that Sarah, medical show that Sarah was thinking of was called Wonderland.
Yes, it was. It absolutely was. And it was set in a mental hospital.
She played Dr. Lila Garrity, spelled exactly the same way as Minka Kelly's character from Friday Night Lights, which is bizarre.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Tara.
Thank you, Dan.
Good game, Dan. That was fun.
Fantastic. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We didn't give you too much of The Changeling. We didn't give you too little The Changeling. We gave you exact Changeling. Before going around the dial, stop that BSI. The Wheel of Time, Iron Chef, and Murder, She Wrote. Eleanor made it work with her no-knack pitch of Project Runway's... I did it again. What is wrong with me? With Project Runway's...
Red Robin.
Yum. Episode. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan. Next up, Christina Tucker joins us on Extra Extra Hot Great for the morning show, and here on EHG Prime next time, it's The Gold with Allison Lowe Huff. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
One sad story is enough for a first date.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I am very want to kill you.
And Professor Dan Cassino.
You know, I think I would know if I crossed over into a fairy tale.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I just want you to ask yourself, am I trying too hard?
Yeah.
Because when you do try too hard, it shows. Okay. And frankly, it's never good.
Okay.